It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio not only Amy Pettit, but someone she found along the road who was sitting in the back of her vehicle. Good morning, Amy.
No, the office dog is in the back of my vehicle. He wouldn't be a great guest.
Okay, I wondered. You were talking to someone in the back of, you know, lifted the back, and I wondered who was there. Whether it was one of your
kids.
That's the
office dog. He's really waiting for his turn on the radio. We've been practicing, but he's not quite ready. So this morning I have Rob Carter, my friend and colleague, who is the agronomist and director of the Plant Material Center, the State Division of Agriculture Plant Material Center. Did I get that right, Rob?
Sounds fair.
Is that the title you want to go by
today?
Sounds
fair. And where is the Plant Materials Center located?
Well, technically, we have a Palmer address, but we are located off South Bodenburg in the Butte.
Deep Butte.
Oh, that's Deep right. Butte.
Yeah, just south of Pyra's U-Pick Farm.
So, Rob, before we jump into all the Plant Materials Center details, because a lot of things happen there, I always like my guests to give us a little bit of background information about themselves, who they are, what they do, and what made them want to be involved in Alaskan agriculture. So can we start there?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate it, Amy, and thank you, sir, for having me this morning. Again, my name is Rob Carter, and I actually grew up in Eagle River. I left out of state like a lot of kids to go to school and find a study that interested me the most. And during that initial stages of my undergraduate, I started working actually in landscape architecture and forestry and found out that sitting behind the desk wasn't what fit me best, but the interest in the plants were. Started focusing on that within a year and immediately changed my major over to focusing on horticulture.
Okay.
Spent years doing that, chasing every plant class I could and a few technical and associate degrees for fun and education and working in the local ag industry there, which was mostly fruits and berries.
Where'd you go to school, Rob?
I did my undergraduate at Utah State University in Logan, small town right on the Idaho border. Beautiful area, really neat. It's actually pretty significant agricultural community now. The SARE program's out of there. They have a plant material center there in that valley now. I knew I wanted to come back to Alaska. I'm from Alaska, always will be from Alaska, and, you know, came here and saw, you know, all the work and research and projects I worked in during academics and saw that everything that was being done anywhere else in the country hadn't been or was being done here, but was very different.
Right.
And saw that, that
behind the times.
We are a little behind the times. And we're relatively new in comparison to a lot of those East Coast large universities been doing research for 100 years. Heck, we haven't been a state that long. So really, I saw some struggles within agriculturalists up here. I saw some really hardworking people that were making and growing some incredible products. And that's what really got me going in that. I started out working for myself for years and then transitioned over to working for the USDA and then had the opportunity to go out to the Plant Material Center and been there 5 years this year.
Yeah, awesome. And so just briefly, when you were with USDA, you were part of the Agriculture Research Service, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and what was your focus there?
Really, our focus there, you know, ARS traditionally is a germplasm. We're a seed bank, a clonal material bank that made distributions worldwide to growers to get material into producers' hands to have them evaluate it themselves and then do the research from there to see what does well in your region. It was mostly focused on a very specific small fruits and berries and rhubarb and those items there that were had interest in Alaska prior to it being shuttled after some budgetary issues on the federal level.
Yeah, another one of those closures. But that I find that that piece of it super fascinating. You never really think about where plant material comes from or where seeds come from. You always just assume that you can go to Johnny's catalog or to the nursery greenhouse and get what you want. But there's this kind of fascinating behind the scenes story about banking those seeds and making sure varieties are protected and we don't have that in Alaska anymore, right? It's all gone.
No, well, we do a portion of it now at the Plant Material
Center.
So But yes, a big portion of that is gone. A lot of that material went to other repositories around the country. So it's there, it's available. And you're right, there is a big disconnect in the people that the end user of seed, of where it comes from. We all expect to go to Home Depot and Lowe's or to Johnny's Seed Catalog and order our favorite pea or favorite grass seed, and don't realize the how extensive the behind the seeds process for maintaining those genetics and then making them available in a clean manner for distribution and use around the country and the world for that matter.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. So, all right. So 5 years ago is when we started working together more closely when I was at the Division of Ag and you came to the Plant Materials Center as a agronomist. And I was thinking about that this morning. I was like, what does agronomist mean? I mean, I know you as a jack of all trades and the guy that runs the Plant Materials Center, but and so I was kind of breaking it down, you know, agronomist. I was like, does it just mean a scientist of agriculture? But Rob's really like an expert in plants. Like, what is it? What is the definition of an agronomist?
So technically, it's ancient Greek actually for agro or agron and I think nomics. So it's like field law is how that would translate over the hundreds of years, but or thousands of years. Really, it's an individual that's focused on propagation and maintenance of food, identifying those uses, and then really it's just the use of plants for food, fiber, fuel, and then a lot of work on soil health and soil fertility.
Yeah.
And that's kind of really the
focus.
It's
a lot.
It is.
It's a lot.
I know how much I don't know, and that's pretty interesting.
Well, it never ceases to amaze me how I can call you and ask you a question about something, whether it's about hemp or strawberries or anything plant related, and you always seem to have the information. So you're quite the resource. But a lot of people know about the Plant Materials Center, but I would say a lot of people don't.
You are correct.
Yeah. So let's go into a little bit of the details about what is the Plant Materials Center and why is it there, and what resources does it provide to Alaskans?
Sure. The Plant Materials Center has actually been around for almost 30 years. It's an amazing place. You know, I tell people, and ever since I've been there, it's the best kept secret in state, in the state, especially in the state government system, and then and then in the state for agriculture in general. And mind you, I'm a little jaded since I work there and get to manage the facility. But, you know, a lot of work had been done in previous years to make the establishment what it is. We are under Department of Natural Resources within the state and under the Division of Ag in the main office here in Palmer and satellite office in Fairbanks. But really what the facility is and what it always has been is it's focused on helping support an agricultural industry. And through that avenue, I look at it as an applied science center that does and maintains seed. Again, those behind-the-scenes seed of how things move and go from places is we're the foundation seed maintainers and producers for Alaska. And I know that's a unique word, but think it is of it as the lowest generation of seeds.
Right.
We do that for grass, for grain, a number of forbs or flowering plants, mostly native, as well as for potatoes in the state. We also have we work very closely with the Natural Resources Conservation Service for working on reclamation and native plant use. We work with mine sites and DOT road right-of-ways looking to use and better utilize native plants for reclamation and revegetation. We work on soil health projects. We work on maintaining right now 281 different varieties of potatoes.
Yeah.
We maintain about 61 grasses, native grasses that are used. And we develop that seed and make it available for sale to agricultural producers around the state.
Yeah. How many acres is the facility, Rob?
Technically, we have 108 in production. The actual state land that it sits on is closer to 400, but a lot of that's out in the floodplain of the Matanuskin-Kinnick River.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's pretty much it would be irresponsible farming if we went out that far. So I think that we stay where we're at, and as long as we continue to meet what I think are the objectives of Alaskan agriculturalists, and we're building to provide that seed and do our projects, then we're pretty good on that 108 acres.
Yeah. And to be clear, so it is the Plant Materials Center. You guys don't do any work currently directly with livestock or any animals on the facility, is that correct?
No animals on the facility. We do actually and have been for the last 3 or 4 years working on forage evaluations.
Sure.
So we're trying to identify the use of native plants in replace of traditional timothy and brove, evaluating them for their production, their yield, as well as their nutritional value. Wouldn't it be a boon for an agricultural producer if we had the opportunity to grow a native grass that required less nutrients and less water, that produced as well or better than traditional timothy and brome?
Right.
So we're going through those field plots now. So indirectly, you know, working with the livestock. And then, of course, with cereal grains for feed and forage for those animals.
Yep. So a question that has come up of a fair number of times, and I'll let you answer it, is people will say, well, I thought the university did those things. So what's the difference between the Plant Materials Center and what might be happening at UAF's experiment farm, either here or in Fairbanks?
So a lot of people do see us very similar, and I think that's the education and outreach side, that extension side. There's definitely not a lot of us agriculturalists or agronomists in the state to even fulfill that need. So the university does a good job. A great job on what they do. And I think that the difference there is, again, we are working on a lot of native plant issues, and then there are maybe some of that in the cold climate stuff in Fairbanks. But our focus is on the applied science. Our focus is putting plants in the ground, evaluating them, evaluating their ability to improve soil health, and then making that seed available from those plants that have been selected to agricultural producers in the state. And really, the Plant Material Center, when it started, was in conjunction with USDA and the university.
Right.
They were breeding seed and we were maintaining it. It kind of takes two, it's a kind of a two-edged sword there. You have to have someone looking for them and breeding them and then someone maintaining them. And that's where we fill in the difference. And then, you know, now with limited funding going around both federally and on the state level, we I think are very complimentary to each other. The folks over
there
work on stuff.
Both, right? I mean, we need more.
I'd actually like to see about twice as many folks over there and with us as well.
Yeah.
Just to help improve the agricultural industry in Alaska.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've kind of given a skim, an overview of what happens out at the PMC, as we'll refer to it. But let's break it down by industry type. Because I know you have you've got quite a few staff there kind of focused on specific projects, et cetera. You mentioned that you guys do a lot of work with the grains and you do a lot of work with potatoes and then forbs and grasses. And I know you do some variety trialing of specialty crops. So so let's pick one of those and kind of jump into some details about what you guys actually do out there. I'll throw out, let's start with potatoes, because on Monday I was at my kiddos' elementary school doing a seed potato planting activity with them. And I, David from the Division of Agriculture there, Vista, he met me there and we worked on it together. And he brought some Generation Zero seed potatoes from you guys.
That would be correct.
And then I had bought some seed potatoes from Fred Meyer from Little Susitna Farm. And they were much larger, right? And so that was one of the kids and the staff, everyone's first question is, why do these seed potatoes look so different? I was working with kindergartners and first graders, so I didn't want to go into a bunch of I didn't want to try to explain to them the difference between Generation Zero and whatever those Little Susitna Farm potatoes were, because I didn't know. But can you talk about it a little bit? Because you're an expert on that, and I didn't want to give them bad information. So what does that mean when a potato is Generation Zero?
So I guess, you know, it is unique, and a lot of people, again, behind the scenes of the seed industry, I think we start off by saying that seed potatoes are maintained through a process of in vitro propagation. So meristem in a lab and a thing, and this is all potato seed. It's not a GMO process. It's a clonal propagation process, right?
Make that really clear.
Well, people see things in a test tube and they start to get a little nervous, and it's not. It's a clone, just a different style of clonal propagation. You know, seed certification, that process of having low generation seeds, been around since, you know, it's probably the oldest agricultural seed certification program in the world. Early 1900s in Germany, started in America in 1914, and really it's probably been the biggest one-crop certification process ever on record.
Wow.
And it was for the betterment of the potato industry. And so the thing is this, and it's not just with potatoes, you got to look at fruits and strawberries and grapes, things that are clonally propagated, you know, they carry their sickness with them. They carry their cold, right? So in their case, it's disease, virus and fungi. And by maintaining those in vitro or in a test tube in tissue culture, you can test those plants, those plantlets in that case, for disease and virus and make sure that they've tested clean, and then move that stuff out. Once that plant leaves that test tube and goes into a controlled environment such as a greenhouse that's isolated from the vectors of moving those diseases around, that is what we call that generation zero process, or in some states a pre-nuclear process.
Okay.
Once a potato moves into a field, that would be its first generation. So you kind of think of that generation name as how many years it's been in soil.
Okay.
Seed potato producers, and we're talking about tubers of seed, not true potato seed, the little berries that form on top that are slightly poisonous to you, that are actually closely related or more like a tomato. The seed potato part itself that's clonally propagated, that generation process, let's say generation zero that you got from us, were straight out of a greenhouse, out of a, and that's why their size was much smaller, probably anywhere between a pea and a shooter marble, is what I like to tell people. And something you got from a local farm that was a seed producer, a certified seed producer, might have been generation two, three, four, or five. You know, legally they can push them out to about eight, but, you know, we recommend, hey, move those things through the system, because over time, and that clonal propagation of you digging tubers, putting them, storing and putting them back in the field, has opened them up to catching literally a cold or a virus,
right,
and then maintaining that. And it can overall reduce the grower's yields. It can help move things from soil to soil, from farm to farm. What one person's doing can affect their neighbor.
Absolutely.
And really, that's the process of that thing and the importance of understanding where your seed comes from, that you're not planting the stuff you bought at the grocery store.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
You know, because the issue with that is that what you're doing in your yard can affect a commercial producer across the street or a mile away.
Yep.
Because a lot of these diseases that are within these tubers of potatoes and other plants themselves are vectored by things like aphids and psyllids, and they go in, they bite it, they then vector the disease, and then they move to another field, and heck, with our winds, they could have moved 5 miles, probably farther than that.
Yeah.
And then go ahead and bite another plant and then infect that one. And then over time that increases throughout that field, you know, and can decimate a seed field, which then those fields that are used for seed end up being what we buy as table stock or ware in the market,
right,
after they hit that generational year. So what you got was fresh out of a greenhouse, and those were, I guess, the earliest and the smallest of any potato around.
Yeah, it was really fun. And talk about outreach, because I think I saw 7 classrooms of elementary school kids, and so there were 7 teachers and plus another 7 aides and, you know, some helpers around, and we were planting in the raised beds at Mokatons Elementary. But I was kind of surprised and a little concerned about the number of adults who were there with me who were surprised to hear that they should not be planting the table stock potatoes that are in their pantry that start to grow, you know, little roots, as they call them. I know they're not roots, but they're like, but that my potato's starting to grow roots. Why can't I just plant it? And I was like, oh no, we can't do that. That's why we're here. You know, certified seed potatoes only. So definitely lots of room of opportunity to tell more people about that and to get that word out more. But there's I got a lot of why does it matter? And I was trying to explain to them, you know, the disease. And when you're talking to kindergartners and first graders, I did use the cold example.
Yeah.
I said, you know, what happens in your group of 4 tables when one of you comes to school sick, and then your table buddy gets sick, and then the next day, and then pretty soon the whole classroom is sick, right? I'm like, potatoes can get sick too. And hopefully they heard some of that. But I really was a little surprised by how many adults thought that they could just plant their table stock potatoes and be okay.
Sure. And I think the thing, you know, it's really hard for someone, it's hard to identify something you can't see. And unfortunately,
sure,
these viruses, they do express themselves within the plant itself some, but it reduces your overall yields, right?
And,
and then it can impact a hardworking farmer or agriculturalist that makes their living doing this. I mean, you know, really, you know, that's the issue with this stuff, is we're trying to promote that clean use of seed because it's better for our environment, it's better for our agricultural industry, and it's better for you as a home gardener or a small commercial farmer or a large commercial farmer.
Yeah.
You're going to have better yields, you're going to have better storage, you're going to have a more acceptable product that's eventually going to go to market or Absolutely. Be consumed for yourself.
Yep. Yep. I want to remind folks that we are on Ag Matters Radio this morning on Wednesday morning. We're live from 7:30 to 8. If you have a question, you could call in at 745-8951. We'll rebroadcast on Friday, and you can't call in with questions then. So Rob Carter, the agronomist and director from the Plant Materials Center, is with me this morning. And so we've covered potatoes. Let's jump into one of the other major industry sections that you serve out there at the PMC. What do you want to talk about next?
Well, I think a quick follow-up to that would be, you know, our foundation seed program. What's so interesting about that is as we follow that same trait with potatoes, at trying to stay low generation, as clean as possible. So we'll look at like oats or our barley or wheat that we maintain out there and make available for sale for agricultural producers to produce. Same thing. When you start buying seed, you know, what you buy and I buy when we go to local stores is pretty much unclassified white label seed. When you're looking to produce seed and increase seed for sale on a large scale or a small scale, you want to use the cleanest possible seed available. And so having a resource like us to get that, if you're going to take 1 pound and turn it into 1,000 or 100,000, starting with that cleanest seed is the utmost important for both your maintenance within your field and within the quality of the product you're going to have when you're done. So that kind of follows that same thing there. We are the only seed cleaning facility in the state of Alaska. We've had a pretty record year, probably double what we have anywhere else. A lot of new seed growers have come on around the state, which is, in my eyes, kind of a rough way to judge that we see an industry growing, and that's great.
What does that mean for the layman, seed cleaning? So what does that mean?
So easy way to see it is you go to the store, you buy a bag of grass seed, and it looks like a bunch of seeds all look very similar.
Right.
When a combine goes through a field or a harvester goes through a field, it's non-selective, right? It picks up every flower and every weed seed and every, you know, oat for say that it's trying to rocks, everything it's trying to harvest. There's a process called cleaning and conditioning, and that is where that raw product from the harvester is brought into a facility. And I tell people it's very similar to gold mining, just replace the air with water, right? We use size, shape, and specific gravity of the seed that we're trying to remove. To remove all other impurities. Great way to help control the spread of weeds. Most importantly, invasive plants that we have in some areas and we don't have in others. And so again, just like not using your table stock from the grocery store for planting your potatoes, you want to make sure that, you know, the seed that you're being, be a steward as well as an agricultural producer. So make sure that you're using the cleanest and most viable seed possible to improve your yields and then improve the environment that you're working in.
Yeah. So, and just to be clear, so these are, it's actually like a giant machine does that seed cleaning. You guys aren't sitting there hand selecting with tweezers or anything.
No.
Is there any video of that working anywhere, like on the Division of Ag website?
I think there is a couple of them, right, actually. And I believe there's one, I'm not a social media fan, but I think through the Alaska Grown, I think they grabbed a couple screenshots of it and seen some of it. And
the news...
Yeah, we've had a couple people's out. We've had KTVA and ADN came out. And so they were interested in seeing the process. So that's all kind of scattered around. I'm hoping we can start improving our website at the Plant Materials Center and making some of the fun visuals available so people can understand what the process is.
Absolutely, because it is, if you haven't seen it before, it is pretty fascinating to see.
Sure.
That reminds me of when a few years ago, before I left the Division of Agriculture, we kind of had a field day out at the Plant Materials Center. Do you guys continue that? Is that something you plan on doing again? Or
That is my high hopes for this year, for this fall, is to put one back in place.
Okay, good.
We had a transition there in management in the division, and we didn't know which direction we were going there last year and didn't do one, but you were right. It was a fantastic event. We had a ton of people out. And I think a lot of people saw this stuff that they had no idea existed.
Right.
And then,
if you just turn the corner out there on Bodenberg and you don't even realize that the PMC is down there on the corner. I would encourage the director and you guys to do that again if you can.
Well, I appreciate it.
Another hot topic in the news lately that you guys may or may not be involved with is if the legislature ends up passing the hemp legislation and allowing for the legal production of hemp in the state. Will the Division of Ag be involved in that?
Actually, yeah, we will. That SB6, that's currently the one furthest along in the process. There's a companion bill to that. But we actually have been involved in that. You know, we get asked questions by those bill sponsors that start that process. And really, if that bill passes, gets finalized and signed by the governor, it is through my interpretation and talking to those folks is that process and that pilot program and the registration for it to be produced here legally following some pretty broad federal guidelines will all be housed through the Plant Material Center.
Good.
So I think it's an interesting addition to Alaskan agriculture. I get the questions over the phone and through emails saying, what are we going to do with it? And, my response at this point is to say, well, you're not going to know unless you try.
Sure.
And why would you ever want to turn down an opportunity to grow and add an additional agricultural commodity to Alaska and our growing ag industry, if it's used for fiber, fuel,
food,
forage,
animal feed. Yeah.
Animal feed. I haven't found anything you can't do with
fabrication,
it yet.
Fabrication. So all the Fs.
It's definitely there.
I'm on the governing board of the Alaska Food Policy Council,
okay.
And we've been approached to write a letter of support for that bill. And so we kind of, we're the Alaska Food Policy Council. So we, we're talking a lot about food security and food security issues, et cetera. But our governing board really looked at that closely and said, this is an opportunity for producers in Alaska to diversify, to expand their production base, to increase revenue streams. It is a food source. It's a feed source for animals. I mean, so we're taking a positive position on it and are in support of that legislation moving forward. We'll see what happens. But.
Well, yeah, take the legislation out of it and just look at the plant itself. I mean, you you see a plant that has a seed with 33% protein and 3.5 times the omega-3s and 6s as tuna. I mean, things that nutritionally us as people have been chasing forever. And this is a plant that may grow very well in Alaska. And so
looking
at it for the agricultural community, the health of Alaska, looking at that plant's ability to do phytoremediation in areas and uptake contaminants in soil, I mean, the opportunity is there for Alaska to step into where a few other states are doing, but $600+ million industry in Canada. And we're importing the most of that.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. So we'll see what happens there. It blows my mind how fast this half hour goes, but we're approaching ending time already. But we have a few other things to chat about. So we've talked about potatoes and we've talked about grains and seed out at the Plant Materials Center. The other one that jumps to my mind is some of the variety trialing of specialty crops. Can you talk about that a little bit? Some of the broccoli and cauliflower and other work that you've done out there?
Yeah, we've been really lucky to have some federal funds to be able to do some of that work through USDA specialty crop block grants where we start identifying things. I mean, it's kind of an ever-going and ever-chasing wheel when you look at variety trials. They're always changing. There's always the old standards, and then some of those get bought up and moved away. But for upcoming farmers, I mean, some of the hardest things to do in a small acreage land is say, hey, what am I going to grow?
What does well?
What looks the best? What's a value? What's a product that I can put on a table at a market or sell to a restaurant that both is healthy and nutritious and does well in Alaska? And so identifying varieties that do well
and
in Alaska
tastes
good.
Yeah.
Is the utmost important for both large and small farmers and home gardeners as well. I mean, Plant Material Center, I mean, we work with some of the largest farmers in the state and probably some of the smallest, as well as a lot of just folks that stop by to say hi.
Sure.
And
call you with crazy questions.
Oh, we get a lot of those. but they're great. You know, that's the thing is
every day something new.
Well, it's ask questions, right? We might not have an answer, but we know somebody that does probably.
Right.
And, I give that credit to the staff at the Plant Material Center. I mean, there's a lot of dedicated people that work out there and really the knowledge that out there is just unbelievable and untapped resource. So, you know, that's where I encourage anybody that's producing, like I said, if that's on their back deck or if it's on 100 acres here in Palmer or 5,000 acres in Delta, and you have questions, look us up and call us, and we'll help. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
Those
publications about, I think we did like one pager fact sheets about the specialty crop varieties and gave specific variety recommendations,
sure.
right?
Yep. And again, yeah. we try to do them 2 years so we can take into consideration environmental and soil conditions that may affect their production and the overall yields of those. We've worked on asparagus, and we're currently working on broccoli and cauliflower, and then we're going to try to throw in a new crop every year. I think it's like my intent. I really want to have this spring kind of fun guessing game for, you know, Alaska to pick what items trialed that year, where the interest is. So it'd be kind of fun to have something out there on the internet, a poll where an individual could say, hey, I want zucchini, or I want squash,
kale,
or I want kale, or I want carrots. And so, there are 1 year reports. I really like to wait till that second year's out to put out the first year information, so we have consistency in what's being produced and the quality of what's being produced on those trials. But we do a lot of that. And again, any way to disseminate that information to the general public and the agricultural industry in the state that can better everyone.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the point, right?
Yeah.
It's to provide an opportunity for people to grow food, to put healthy food in their mouth and support their community.
Yeah. It's another piece of the puzzle that I think, if you're not a home gardener, which I am not, it's just something that you don't always think about when you walk into the grocery store or you go to the farmer's market. You don't think about all the time and effort and work that went into selecting which type of broccoli should I grow this year? You know, which one is going to be resistant to pests? And then that taste good factor is so important, because not every variety tastes the same, right? I mean, they hold different water contents and they just flavor out differently. So so much work goes into it. I don't think people give enough credit to our producers about how much time and effort goes into the behind the scenes stuff of producing food in this state.
No, and I think that is one thing that everyone has to realize, is that people and agricultural producers in Alaska, especially and worldwide, you know, work their tails off to have things that we expect to see on the market shelf right. every day at the farmer's market or at the grocery store up the street. So, you know, thank a farmer and be happy that you know them and
that
support
we have them.
Yeah, and support your local farmers, because, you know, they're really the cornerstone to your community and providing Absolutely. Access to healthy food and a healthy community.
Yeah. Well, man, that was like a perfect wrap-up note. Thank you for that, because our time on Ag Matters this morning is actually done. So thank you, Rob Carter, so much for joining me this morning.
I appreciate it, Amy. And thank you very much for having me.
Look for more information about the Plant Materials Center on their website, which is plants.alaska.gov.
It is. All right. Come visit us, call us, any questions you have.
Perfect.